respect, Chairperson and honorable members, if I must gloat about the, some of the work that the MDDA is doing, we collaborated with UNESCO on developing, they did conducted the research on some of the MDDA beneficiaries. I also included Jozi FM, even though it's never been a beneficiary, but I think it's a flagship and a case study of a community radio station in South Africa that has never come for funding, and yet it is doing so well. And I said to UNESCO, this of the stations that you can interview for your community broadcasting viability booklet. That booklet is going to be available in the next month. I think that it's 99%, almost 90% complete. They shared it with me, and I will share it with the relevant stakeholders. And it talks about community broadcasting and viability across the world. And I'm happy that through our collaboration with UNESCO, there's the South African dedicated chapter in that UNESCO booklet. So those are the things that we're trying to do to actually ensure that there's prominence of the work of the MDDA abroad. In terms of quota 2, we actually went up from 89 or 87 to 93%. And again, Chair, you will see that the recurring theme has been this employment equity plan, which we missed in quarter one. We then started developing it in quarter two. And I think in quarter three, then it went to the board and it has now been approved. These are just key highlights, Chair, to say annually, I think we've explained this to the committee before, that unlike what we found where there was a backlog and we were choosing from the backlog, now we've got an annual call for grant applications. Chair, it is very important for me to announce that we receive, for instance, in the 2021, 2022 round, and it's similar. If I must make an example, for print alone, we receive over 170 applications, and over 150 will be compliant. But our target will be 6, Chair, because there is no money. In the next MTEF, we're projecting 2 million, and that's why the print is up in arms. When you receive complaints from print and print wanting to march to our offices and all that, I think we must be sympathetic to them, because what can you do when you've got a publishers that are more than 200 in this country and you just are projecting 2 million per annum for those publishers? They're not happy with us at all at Chairperson. And you're going to ask yourself what the MDDA had done to actually alleviate this situation. When I joined the organization together with the executive and the board, we went to all the big four in 2018. They were not happy with us. The first thing that they raised was our lack of our accountability, that apparently we had not gone back to them to say this is how we'd utilize their previous contracts or supports in their contracts. And so they then decided that once those contracts lapsed, they would walk away. We went back in 2018. They were not happy in 20, and in fact, they were even more unhappy and agitated that they'd been meeting acting CEOs, including myself. In 2019, we went with the deputy minister. The tone was a little bit different. In 2020, we tried clinching those MOAs and SLAs with them. But it is clear that in terms of money, they're also losing. In terms of revenue, they're losing a lot, and they're bleeding as the commercial print sector. They therefore have not promised us any financial support. They've promised us some things in kind, access to cheap paper, printing paper, access to training, access to discounts. And those are the only things that the print sector can give us. If I must move to the broadcasters, even though we get our budget, the largest part of our budget, over 60% of our budget comes from the commercial broadcasters through the USAF levy, we still receive the demand also in the broadcast funding is very high. Our target is around 2022 annually, but we receive over 80 applications. And Chair and honorable members, you would be surprised that the compliance levels have actually grown. So we would actually, in that 80, we have about more than 50 compliant community radio stations. And so community radio stations and TVs are also unhappy with us when we write back and we say, sorry, you complied, but we didn't have enough resources. Please apply again. They just feel that we're wasting their time. Chair, it is worth mentioning that MultiChoice, in the 3 years that I've been at the MDDA, we've had to write them a thank you letter. And I don't know where Mama Ubeka or Mama Fabu, without sounding like I'm pushing with Multi Choice, but I felt that if they were able, because of our accountability, to increase their support steadily by 18 million in addition to what they've been giving us over the 3 years, and I think they deserved a letter. Chairperson, without stakeholder partner and partnerships, MGDA will never go anywhere. These partnerships, for various reasons, training, coaching, any other support, research, thought leadership, and just financial support, non-financial support, it's very important for the MGDA to always be partnering. And as a matter of fact, Chair, in 2 days, the Deputy Minister and the Minister, or let me put it the other way around, the minister and the deputy minister will be launching the fundraising strategy. The fundraising strategy on the 11th of March. And the aim with that fundraising strategy is so that we actually know what we want to be funded, and we identify potential funders or partners. So you've got, again, MICT would assist us with funding. NEMISA, we actually have got a NEMISA workshop today and tomorrow. We're in partnership with the Funds Public, with FPB. All these, actually, whether we get money or not from them, are very valuable to the support to the sector. Indeed, because of the COVID, we've got a huge backlog on the launches of the studios, because even though there were backlogs, we were approving projects to be funded. So we last year, we actually then asked the political ethical principals if they could assist us launch this. At the point, there were 20, and I'm sure there are more than 20 now. And this is what we've been unveiling. Still talking about the partnerships there. My colleague from GCIS also talked about the pandemic response plan, which is a business continuity plan for organization necessitated by the Disaster Management Act and the pandemic. The MDDA staff largely worked from 2020 on a staggered approach from level two on a rotational basis. However, a recent board decision in, I think, at the end of February was that staff must return to work on a permanent basis, except for those with comorbidities. And so we're doing that. And there's also a new introduction by the board to say that those that do not or feel like and we've had GCIS research findings that not everyone is comfortable at this point with the vaccination. But we are saying at the MDDA, those that would be unable to vaccinate for one reason or the other will be expected from the 1st of April to produce a weekly test to the employer, and people have been given until the 31st of March for a compulsory. So we've been given compulsory return from the 1st of April, 1st of February, and we've returned to the offices, and we've been given until the 31st of March for compulsory vaccination. If you can't, then you then move to the group that will be testing weekly and submitting a weekly pandemic results. Chair, I think it would be disingenuous for the MDDA to present a glorious picture as if it is immune to challenges. We do have challenges with our clean audits, but we do have challenges that I don't think are insurmountable. We've got irregular appointments that I think came through, especially the one of the CFO came through your office. And I think through to the minister and then to the board, and an investigation led to the disciplinary hearing of the CEO. However, I think it is correct to still say that we have given the CFO 3 contracts in 3 years. He has not signed all of them. He has always found a reason to unilaterally change whatever clauses that he deems not suitable to him, even if they are standard basic clauses. As a result, as I said yesterday, I have thus escalated the resolving of the irregular appointment of the CFO to the board, because I think as a CEO, I have exhausted. I mean, we've given him 3 contracts, and he says he's not been happy with all of them. There were 2 waves of irregular employments. Phase 1 was the CFO, which came through your office, Chair, and there was another one which I don't think came through your office. and that one included junior staff members. The board then instructed that those staff members, one, accepted the demotion because it's called the manager without a proper position being advertised and him getting it. He agreed to that. There were two others that seemed to get into the organization in a manner that is deemed irregular through an investigation by the board. And the board, through a legal opinion internally, then opted that we ask those two employees to step down or face the court that would then have to confirm their status. I'm happy to say that those staff members have opted for us to take them to court for their employment status to either be confirmed or be nullified. A similar legal opinion was developed on behalf of the CFO. It seems the board was not agreeable to that legal opinion, and there was another legal opinion. And as I'm saying, I think the issue of the CFO and the contract is now in the hands of the board chair. Vacancy rate, I'm not going to go back there because we are from there. These are the programs under which we implement our work. Chair, in terms of especially quarter two, you will see that we actually have exceeded some of the targets. And I am not in any way going to go through the targets that were met because I've dealt with the ones that were not met. And I have explained their catch-up plans. And I just want to see now the chairperson of the board has spoken about the board and whose term is ending, including that of the shareholder that is also ending mid-May, and the two appointments that are expected from your offices, chairperson. Otherwise, currently, unlike the many other years that faced the MDDA with quorum issues, we no longer have quorum issues. It's good. I think it's proper to confirm that Mr. Munjerere then left his resignation after his resignation was accepted in April, and then Mr. Matebula began to act and start and was, I think, appointed a week later in the position of the board. In terms of sources of revenue, Chair, as I wrap up, you would know that the MDDA is funded through the USAF levies, which comes from the commercial broadcasters. That is the largest chunk of our revenue. That is there for 21,22, 56,135,844. Grants income is the one that we get appropriated through to GCIS on our behalf, and it gets to us on these tranches of 8.2 million. That money is not growing, Chairperson, given the constraints in the fiscus. The fundraise, the broadcast funders is also not expected to grow very much. So, but what we did, the thing we did was during the 2020 initial lockdown, we wrote to MultiChoice and we said, given the fact that the businesses are unlikely to do well given the pandemic, we're asking you to actually increase the discretionary grant. So their discretionary grant was 13 million in terms of their 0.2% of the USAF levy. And we said, please, just so that we guarantee that we can support some projects, because a non-discretionary grant is not guaranteed. And they increased that non-discretionary part from 13 million to 20 million. And so they went up to 46 million the other year on a 40 million contract. This year they gave us, for 2021-22, they gave us 51.9 million. So that's why I'm saying, I think the letter that we wrote to MultiChoice to say thank you is well deserved. In fact, we're going to meet them at the funders breakfast on the 11th. They're actually on the program. They are the only ones that speak because they are our largest funder. And in that event, we will be launching our fundraising strategy, as I've said. The last one is actually the income on investment, interest on investments. It's also taking a knock given the favorable repo rate. But we'll see how it's going, because I think the interest rate is going up. Chair, just to close on the slide, this slide then, if we were getting the money from all the provided for revenues in the in the Act. The Act provides for the USAF levy, for the grants income, for income the interest on investments. But there's also two other areas that we have not tapped into, which are the ones that we actually want to focus on in the sustainability model, in the fundraising strategy. One, it says we can accrue any money which is legally accrued. Those are donations. So recently we had a meeting with Raids Foundation, and we're negotiating a long partnership. And we can convince them, I'm looking for a 10-year relationship with them. So then the other one is foreign donations. And that is the reason why we've asked the minister to be the face of the fundraising strategy, and he's agreed to say that who do we go to overseas, and the minister in DERCO would actually guide us in terms of the countries that we can actually tap into. Chair, I think I've taken too much time. This is our expenditure, and we actually are expecting to expand exactly as we had asked. I think I must end it there, Chair. Because I think I've explained where we get the money and how the money is expended to projects, and is expended to administration costs, to board costs, and to employee costs. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I thank you.
Thank you, to the MTDA. As I said, we'll then allow space for members to engage with the presentation so that we close on CIS and MTDA, and then get to DCDPG. Of course, I was a bit lenient because you do not have your political principles here, so didn't want the committee to look like harassing you. But I do know that we'll recover this time as the Deputy Minister on DCDT would be able to help us to what I have asked for in terms of the approach to presentation. Honourable members, I will then identify hands. Please, MTDA, if you can unshare the
presentation.
I just want to check the hands. You'll assist me, Jira, on your side.
Because yes, Chairperson. Sure. We have Ms. Podlani, I am Mr. Gumbu, and we have Ms. Majoldi.
Who was saying, Chairperson? Is that Honorable Gumbu?
Gumbu. Yeah.
Okay, we'll start there. Honorable Gumbu, Honorable Podlani, then Honorable Majoldi, and then I'll identify the other hands. In that order. Honorable Gumbu?
No, thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, let me start by appreciating the two presentations made. But just want to make a comment on GCIS. Chairperson, I don't necessarily have questions on GCIS. But just to commend them for the work they're doing, particularly on the filling in of vacant positions, and that they've managed to achieve 94 of their set targets. I think that is commendable, and all I can say is that I can see that the indication is that the GCIS is still on track, Chairperson. That's all what I wanted to say.
Honorable Gumbu, Honorable Polani, you are recognized. Can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first, let me welcome the presentation. I think as a new member, it really helps for me to also understand the entities. The first question I have to the GCIS is on the public sector magazine. In the presentation, it was said that initially this was going to be outsourced, but then a decision was made because there was no suitable service provider. I'm not sure how we get to a point where you only find out because the no suitable service provider, that then it can be done in-house, noting that it's now going to be done internally with freelancing with the video services. So can I just please be clarified on that? Are they going to then come back at some point and say, now that there is a suitable service provider, we are outsourcing it? Obviously, there's cost implication with whatever decision is made. And on the 103,000 COVID leaflets that the entity says it has distributed, was there any way for them to measure the impact? And I ask this in the age where everything has become so digitalized. What ways were available for them to measure the impact of the actual leaflets, if at all? And on the MDDA, we also welcome that presentation. Listening to the presentation and the presenter talking about the printing fraternity threatening a march to their offices, for me, that spoke to a gap in stakeholder management. But looking at the website of the entity, you do see that there is people who are doing those respective responsibilities. So I'm worried about there being cracks perhaps in stakeholder management, or maybe you look at it in another way, you say it's bigger demand, which then brings me to my question to say, I am not going to lie, you get to understand what MDDA does because you sit in this committee, but in terms of how they reach out to the communities so that communities know about the work that they do, and I can't find the balance between that and the over interest in the services that the entity supplies. So I would really be interested to understand how they work in terms of stakeholder management. And lastly, on the challenges they face with the CFO and the court battles and whatnot, what does that do to the morale of the entity, noting what the presenter was saying, that it is a tightly knit entity? So what does the issues with the CFO do to the morale of the entity? I know I said lastly, but what I did not understand, Chairperson, you can guide me. Ms. Zukiswa, is she in an acting capacity or is she now appointed in her position? That is my submission, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bolani. I'll now recognize Honorable Machozi. Honorable Machozi.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning to Honorable Members. GCIS and MDDA. Maybe on GCIS as well, Chairperson. Let me start maybe by welcoming the two presentations, and also say that in the GCIS we are always happy with the performance that they always bring to us as the committee, and also the work that they are doing out there that we can see as the committee. And also, Chairperson, maybe to emphasize, it's not necessarily a question, but to emphasize, as much as they've stated that it's about more than 60% that have vaccinated, and the other 24, it's maybe those ones do not want to vaccinate because of certain reasons, and I've heard them that they've been getting a lot of media advertisement. Then it will help us if they even expand more on their advertisement in terms of how safe it is to vaccinate and so forth, all of those. So it must not be an ending now. It must be something that will be continuous up until at least we got 90% or more than 90% of all South Africans that will be vaccinated. So yeah, I just wanted to emphasize that on the issue of GCIS, that can they please on their advertisement make sure that they emphasize on the point of the importance of people getting vaccinated, and also not stop with the SMSs. The SMSs that we've been receiving, I think if people will receive these SMSs every now and then, it will then encourage them to also go out there and vaccinate. And maybe also in these SMSs, they must maybe also include the sites that are there, so that a person might know that maybe nearby there is a site that they can go to and vaccinate and so forth, because we can see that there is that number of people who are afraid to go out and vaccinate because of certain reasons or because of the hearsays that are there out in the streets. So if maybe we can minimize that by advertising more and bringing on those SMSs to make sure that people get encouraged to go out and vaccinate. That is all, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Machoze. May I just check, Jira, on your side, if I'm leaving any member before I ask the department and the MPDA to respond?
On my side, Chief.
Okay, we'll then allow you to respond, starting with CIS and then the MPDA.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the honourable members for the responses, the feedback. We really appreciate that we have been commended for the work that we do, and also we really promise the committee that we will ramp up the communication around the vaccination, and also to respond to the issues raised by honourable member Kosani. In terms of the public sector magazine, initially we had plans to do it in print as well as also to do it electronically. So the tender was also to address the electronic print of the TSM. However, after we had went back to analyze the government sector model in terms of who really reads the magazine? Is it feasible? Is it financially viable for us to also do the print on the PSM after we did not find the suppliers? Then we took a decision to say, in terms of the GSM model, which really looks in terms of who really reads the magazine, we find out that the majority of the readers of the PSM are online. Therefore, we took that decision to say, let's rather stick to the print in terms of the PSM. And also through the research that we are doing now, that Treasury requested us to do after they approved the advertisement of the private sector in the Vukuzenzele, we are also commissioning a research to make sure that we look in terms of the PSM as well as the Vukuzenzele newspaper to see in terms of the market out there, what kind of market do we have. We still have to do the print as well as also do the electronic, but also in terms of the digital divide, we have to make sure that we also balance between the elite and those that are not really on the mobile side. So that's why we had agreed that for the PSM, we agreed to do it online for now, but for Vukuzenzele, we'll do both online as well as the print to ensure that we bridge that digital divide. Then in terms of the leaflets, normally we count the stock in terms of the inventory that we issue to the provinces. So throughout their provincial campaigns and also engagement, they issue out those leaflets. So we are able to ensure to check in terms of the stock that was released, how much stock was dispersed, how much stock we still have on hand, so that we ensure that when we are replenishing, we know in terms of our stock levels. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I have addressed, and also I'm happy for the comments that we have received from the members. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Tsers. Today, I'll be directed by the board chair on how you want to respond to matters that have been raised.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think that the CEO will respond to the questions, but safe to say that, to clarify that the CEO came to MDDA in an acting capacity, and she has since been employed in permanent capacity or in a contract of 5 years. So no, she's not acting in the current space. I will let the CEO respond to the other two questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, honorable members, I think I've received calls, got nothing to do with this meeting. So I apologize for that. I retract that. And to those that did not hear, I think I'm grateful. I'm just going to deal then with that confirmation from the chair. I'm going to deal with how do we reach out to the communities and so forth. There's many ways in which we reach out to the communities. Firstly, one of our strategic objectives is to create awareness about community media development and diversity. It's one of our strategic objectives. Then there's training and all those things, and research and the grant funding, which then means that we must be involved with the beneficiaries and potential beneficiaries and so forth. But the other thing that we do is consistently when we issue a grant, funding application, a call for applications, what we do is we then go to we actually have got a media plan, a community media plan, and we then go through outreach programs throughout the country. Sometimes we are accompanied by the ministers, or we go by ourselves. But when we prepare, if we prepare to issue a call for applications on the 21st of May, for instance, in March, April, we begin to get ready to go to all the countries, one, to make an announcement, two, to assist the potential beneficiaries or applicants with how we apply. On our website, we've got the application method on all 11 languages. On all 11 languages, so you can listen on a video in isiXhosa, Afrikaans, isiZulu, Tswana, Pedi. We've got all the 11 languages. That's how, because we want to reach the people, so you can click and follow how we do. And we simplified our application process and our application form, but we go countrywide, and I think we go to two regions per province when we do that. But then the other element is if a certain community invites us. For instance, there's Umtata, there's a group of women that wanted us to come, and because they want us to explain to them. And when we go to explain to this to the ones that are interested in opening a radio station or a television or a newspaper, these particular ones are saying they would like a women television or a women focused a radio station, right? And so we go there and we go with SARS, with SARS, we go with ICASA, with Centec, so that they get a full suite of what we do. But there's just so many interactions we have with the station. At the point when the station has been approved and the installer of the broadcast equipment has gone and installed, we then show our faces through unveiling that station. But there's just so much interaction we have with one station and communities. And then the MNE also kicks in. So there's always a visit by the MDTA in terms of compliance and governance, but also we want to interact with the communities, because these community broadcasters and community media are for the communities, by the communities. And so that is how we interact with our stakeholders. And I think in my presentation, I dealt a lot with why we need partnerships. We've got Facebook, South Africa. We've got we've spoken to the telecommunications about digitization, and so is Facebook South Africa. And we've got UNESCO, we've got SASTA, we've got NEMISA. And in fact, we are at NEMISA today. We've got CEDA because of their training footprint. So those are the stakeholders, MICT CEDA, those are the stakeholders that we also interact with, and they also interact with our stakeholders. In terms of the morale in the organization, I must say that what will assist us is we've asked for a dipstick survey. It's done, and I think it's being the findings are being analyzed by the HR consultant. We have been worried about what the impact of what is happening in the organization would have been, and the survey would actually then assist us in terms of picking up how staff feel and how we can move forward as the executive and the board. Thank you very much.
Uh, Thank you, MDDA. I have seen that Honorable Majozi wanted to still make a contribution in terms of MDDA. So she had indicated that she had forgotten that point and should want to make it now. Honorable Majozi?
Yes, my apologies, Chairperson. I ended up speaking on GCIS and then I forgot that we had two presentations. No, it's not necessarily a question, but it's to say that we acknowledge also the work that they do and also expanding in the local radio stations. Hopefully that it won't be in Soweto only, that they expand in local radio stations that they are connecting with as part of their mandate, that they should also be on local radio stations and so forth. So I hope that we are not only hearing about Jozi FM, that there'll be, that it will be the end of it. Hopefully that other also radio stations, they will also be able to bring on board. And also on the issue of disabilities, the deaf and the what mechanism do they use to reach out to them and then to make sure that they also know about their services. I'm not sure if maybe there is another mechanism that they use, because I know that disabled people are also part of their mandate that as the MDDA. So I just wanted to know that, but we are also seeing progress in the MDDA, and hopefully that they will expand more on other local radio stations.
I think that's the point raised with you, MDDA.
Yes, thanks, Chair. I'll let the CEO respond on the issue around people living with disability and other minority groupings that we may be serving as part and parcel of the mandate of MDDA. However, let me assure Honorable Majozi that the example of Jozi FM was just exactly that, an example from the CEO, as she indicated that it's actually not even a beneficiary of MDDA. However, the team led by the CEO has really been going throughout the country into a disadvantaged communities where we have either launched projects that have been approved. So no, the focus is not only in Soweto. I think in the past month or so, the deputy minister has been taken to from Limpopo to the Eastern Cape to KZN to show that we really are doing the best we can to cater for all communities that are within the mandate that MDDA serves. CEO on the disability.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for that clarity. For us, Jozi is just a case study. And we'd like to see most of our projects becoming Jozi FM. Why is Jozi FM able to sustain itself without asking for government support? That is the reason why I mentioned that example. Indeed, in terms of disability, you know, we started this road with former Minister Nomvula Mokonyane in 2018, where we met with the deaf community, and I'm told it's more than 3 million of them in the country. We've been trying to forge a relationship with them. But what has happened is we're lucky in that in this board, there is a board member who represents a disability sector. We actually met with her last week where she's actually educating the executive in order to equip the executive and management to be able to do its work. She says she's doing some advocacy work with Parliament, and she's going to do some more work with us as well. We're wanting to actually get into that space. It's not easy for us, and so we're looking at how we can be guided. For instance, how if we can have a print, a publication in sign language, for instance, and how do I speak with a deaf person on the phone, or on how do we speak to them? But we have agreed last week with the board member, Ms. Clark, that there is a need. In fact, we want to stop preaching and being on the lip service. we want to actually be seen as doing something about the disability, the persons living with disability community in terms of inclusion in our diversity and development. Just give us some time, board members. It's we're learning on the work, but it is an area of focus for us, starting from now and moving forward. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, MPD. May I just check, honourable members, from the questions we've asked and responses received, if you would want to make any follow-ups or if there are other members who would want to ask further questions. Otherwise, we would want to wrap up on the GCIS and MDBA and allow the next presentation. Ajira, anything on the side?
Nothing on my side.
Okay, if there's nothing on the side, I take it that members are indeed happy with the responses for those that would have asked questions, but also that your voices of appreciation on the work done by GCIS and the entity would be taken back to also their political leadership and the management at that level. But just to conclude on this presentation, I think what comes out clear indeed is that we really appreciate that you are doing everything possible to keep the clean audit, but also balance that with the delivery that we expect to happen. And that is demonstrated by the targets that have been set and the level of achievement. However, we should also indicate to you that would have concerns with regard to those that are underachieved. Because if you perform, just understand that will hit you more because we believe you can still do the 100%. So that we also justify appropriations that get made where government spends money. Maybe something to take GCIS, I think that will also apply to others, is that once we still raise procurement matters in a space of two quarters, that will be about 6 months if we're to count it in that way. And yet we knew as we were setting up the targets that for us to get those to happen, there are dependencies like the procurement that needs to be done. I think we need to improve on the planning side, whether it is the processes or the resourcing thereof, so that we don't come very late, maybe in the third quarter, only to realize at that point that this won't be possible. Because then what would happen is a distortion, especially as it relates to matters of content. That you needed to communicate in quarter one and quarter two, you would have lost an opportunity to take that content to people. It would not matter that in the third or fourth quarter you increase the number of copies to be distributed, but from a content point of view, people would have been deprived of that in the other quarters, as there would have been things happening and needed to be also communicated to people in that school. So that's an area of improvement I think would need to work on. And this includes the assessment that was done only at the time when you realized that there were problems. I think that study could have been done quite earlier so that we know which side to push more than the other and be able to get the right people to do the job. As it relates to the MDDA, I think the same day we really appreciate the work that's happening, and we would want the board and the management there to appreciate that there is a time when the MDDA was working very well, clean audits, but there's also a time in history when that declined. And we are now back at a time when we think there's a relative stability there, and of course, getting clean audits, and there is a sense of delivery. It is matters like the ones of irregular employment contracts that may undermine that. And we would want the board and the management to have indeed their eyes on the ball. We would not be able to justify next time we meet with you, because we may need to meet with you separate from just quarterly reports, but just to check if these things are receiving attention. Because once they come to whistleblowers and these matters are referred to yourselves and they get to the media, it doesn't give the entity a good name. And it may be a small matter that needed just the attention of the board and management, come to a conclusion on the matter, and that it is not a recurring matter. So this is important, because the message we are sending to society is that we have appointed boards to run with the governance matters in these entities. And consistently, we would have said, we do not seek to take the task off the board. And that's why I refer the matters all the time there to be dealt with, especially when they involve operational matters, because they shouldn't be matters of parliament or the executive when we have appointed boards to help us with the governance in that regard. So this matter about the CFO or any other that's still pending needs to be resolved as a matter of urgency, and that we can get feedback on that, so that we can also respond confidently when these matters are brought on our tables, that we are confident the board is handling them. As it relates to the quorum issue, we did take it, chair of the board of the MTDA, that you are expecting us to really move with speed on this. We have made an application for this Thursday. We are just waiting for the approval, which we think we should get an indication by end of the day today, that the subcommittees will then do the deliberations, because everything else has been done. So the deliberations and getting this to the committee by next week Tuesday for adoption of the committee report, which will go to the House. So we hope that even the House, as it considers the matter, it will take into account the importance of having a full complement as far as possible in these agent entities, so that the governance stability is not compromised. So you can live with that, Chair, that there's still that commitment. And that's why we have applied for a day outside of the portfolio committee, given the urgency of the matter that it should be resolved. With that having been said, as I said, would allow yourselves to leave the platform if you would want to leave the platform and go and work on other matters that relate to the entity and the department. However, we'll then proceed with the other departments, DCDT and its entities, as led by the Deputy Minister. So thanks once again to CIS and MDDA. I just wanted to correct something on record, because I've been sent this, that necessarily the Minister of Communications and Digital Technologies would probably join us in the meeting if she has not, because she was to present a bit earlier in the CCC and be able to join at the time we are to deal with DCDT. I'm not sure whether she has been able to join, but if she has not been able to, we will proceed on the basis of what I raised earlier on, where we give the Deputy Minister the opportunity to do the overview. I take it that DM, as we'll be handing over to you, you would probably take us to 11. I'm giving you the 30 minutes on the basis that you'd be also reflecting briefly on your entities. And thereafter, we'll then take in a few minutes each of the entities if there are matters that they want to highlight. And I'm sure we'll still be able to be well on time in terms of engagements before 1 o'clock. Deputy Minister, you are now recognized. Can then take Honorable Maplas.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Maneli. And good morning to all the honorable members of the committee on the platform, colleagues from the entities, the department, the DDG, everybody else on the platform. Chair, I don't think I will even take the 30 minutes because I don't think my gadget will allow me. I've been using this gadget since this morning. We got hit by load shedding just before 9. Before we started the meeting. And so I can see the battery is quite very low. So I'm not sure whether I'll be able to have enough time to even introduce the issues that we've requested me to do. I'm going to suggest, Chair, that because I might get off the meeting at any time if electricity doesn't come back, I won't be able to do justice to the request I just made to myself because I can take you through the highlights of each of the entities together with the department. But for that reason, I think I'll have some difficulty, Chair. Please do accept my apology that I should not even do the overview. We should just request that the department and the individual entities just take us through the highlights of their performance so that I don't have to get off the meeting in the middle of my presentation. But Chair, I was wondering how we're going to do it, maybe just before I get off. We've got about 10 entities in our portfolio. And the department that makes it 11, and we've got about 2 from GCIS as well as MDGA, about 18 presentation. I was wondering whether you are going to be able to do justice to all the presentation if all of these entities come at once. And I can see that they were battling. So, just as an advice, Chair, that maybe in future we might consider staggering them. Because I was also trying to read all the documents. I've got a large legal file full of documents here for the presentation of today. So, yeah. But, Chair, can I please request that you allow them, the entities, before I get off, to take us through just the highlights of their performance, and I should not be allowed to do that on their behalf because of the challenges that I have. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister. Your request is understood. But just to indicate that, yeah, I'm told the minister has just joined. So I think the point to really make is that we are allowing this to happen in the way it happens, where we give the political leadership to take responsibility for the department they are presiding over, including the entities. So that if there are to be issues raised by entities, it will be on specific matters, unless we have invited the entities specifically to come before the committee of course, will then be focusing on those, like it is the case with SAPO, that we would not expect too much of a presentation because we already have a scheduled date to look at the turnaround strategy for SAPO. So the same thing that we do with the others, where we would want to focus on BDM, we did that last week, and focus on those entities that are to handle the BDM under normal circumstances, because the department also has the entity oversight section that receives all these reports well of time. We expect that there will be a sense overall of what happens in the entities. So that's the reason we would have made such a request. But as I said, Deputy Minister, it's understood that if you get cut off without making the point, it may impact negatively on the meeting. But because I'm told the minister has also joined the meeting.
We're finding it difficult to hear you, Chair.
Yes, can hear you.
And probably check if a minister would have watched. Otherwise, we'll then take you to make the presentation. You can hear me? Are you saying you can hear me?
You can hear you now, Chair.
We can hear you, Chair.
No, thank you. All I'm saying is that because the minister is, I'm told the minister is... has joined. Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
we can hear you, Chair.
Okay, I see that Honorable Malatsa was saying he still can't hear. So I just wanted to be sure you hear me. But the minister, I'm told, has joined. It's important to just check if she would want to approach it differently. And if that's not the case, would then go with the guidance the Deputy Minister would have given. But in this case, I would allow the department to then speak first and then probably give us also overview in the entities that are presenting before us. And they will then add only at that, at the time we'll be calling them one by one, which will be a few minutes necessarily. The Minister? You are welcomed. If you can hear, you are welcomed. We were just getting into the actual presentation by the department that is led by yourselves. But we'll give you an opportunity. We did get an apology that you started in the NCCC and you were to present earlier. Thank you. You are welcome. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. And good morning to members. Chairperson, I must indicate I'm still multitasking. I'm about to present at the NCCC. But I thought before I could present there, I would then take this opportunity to join you and go back there and come back to you. But my approach would have been the quarterly reports have been submitted to the portfolio committees well in time and members have read. And we've got, as you've indicated, entity oversight who does reports for us and does the analysis. If the DM is not able to, we could invite the DDG responsible for entity oversight to go individually on each entity, do a summary, because it will be quicker in that way. And then the entities could then respond to specific questions on their non-performance. I don't know whether you would want me to give an example and I could pick any of the entities and just go through the reports that we get from entity oversight that indicate the performance for both the quarters, quarter two and quarter one. What I'll request that we do is to then present both quarter two, we start with quarter two and do a comparison with quarter one because of where we are in the year, Chairperson. That will be my take. And if before I go to the other end, if you'd want me to lead that before we end over to the DDG responsible for entity oversight to do the summaries of the of their own reports, I could do that. I'll hear your guidance, Chair.
No, you can proceed, Minister. In fact, that's the guidance we tried to give earlier on, that because we're presenting quarter one and quarter two almost at the end of the financial year, you'll also get a sense of whether there's improvement going forward. You can do that and then hand over to the administration to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll pick first. I'll do them in, I know you've got your own sequencing, but I'll do them in the alphabetic order, Chairperson. I'll start with the BBI. For quarter two, BBI managed to deliver 13 out of their 19 targets, giving the company an achievement of 68.4% compared to the 57.9% and that was achieved in the first quarter, and 73.7% that was achieved during the same period in the last financial year, which is the year 2021-2022. And the targets that were not achieved were financial sustainability, which are three targets, resilient network, one target, socioeconomic transformation, one target, and organizational enablement, which is one target. And then during the period, the reporting period, BBI reported that its gross profit margins decreased by 10% year on year due to an increase in cost of sales by 10% and a decrease in revenue by 4%. The company indicated that it maintained a positive earnings before interest EBITDA of 10 million rands for the year to date. Although the company had a positive EBITDA and cash generated from its operation, it remained cash constrained as no new cash upfront deals where defensible right of use were signed or received in the past 21 months. And this is the issue that the department is raising with the company, and we are assisting them in terms of how do they get more business, but also on their relationship with Transnet. We are working with them to resolve the issues with Eskom on the matter. Based on the comprehensive income for the year, BBI has made an operational loss of 64 million before tax against a budgeted profit of 33 million. And that is the issue of concern. We continue to work with them to find new models of how they can generate cash. And part of that work is also under the SA Connect model. And indicated in that revenue, 4% lower was compared to the same period in the previous financial year and was 37% below budget for the quarter. In the main, the organization blames this allocation on SA Connect size and anticipated upgrades, but we should not materialize. But as you are aware, we are then aggressively improving the implementation of the SA Connect performance. On governance matter, BBI was requested to submit performance agreements of the CEO to enable the department to assess whether the BBI's annual performance targets and KPIs are included in the performance agreement of the CEO and further cascaded to the CFO. And BBI submitted the performance scorecards of the CEO and CFO as per the request from the department. It has been noted that the balance scorecard of the CFO was signed on 7th September 2021 and the CEO one still needs to be signed by the board, and this matter has been raised with the board to make sure that they correct and rectify that period, more especially when performance evaluation and performance assessment has been a matter that was raised even by the Auditor General and also consequence management. You can't do consequence management and performance management without a performance contract in place. It has been noted that the performance scorecard of BBI CFO is not 100% aligned to the corporate plan target, and they've been directed to correct that. And if you do the corporate plan, the following targets which should have been included in the KPIs or KPAs of the CFO increase, which includes increasing funding of 450 million, funding secured is not in there, improved cash position, 36% revenue, year-on-year growth is not included. And according to the CFO scorecard, the expected target is 641 million revenue budget, excluding grant of 272 million for SA Connect Phase 1C. It is difficult to confirm this target is aligned with the corporate plan because it's not structured or written in a manner that aligns the same with the corporate plan targets. Therefore, in terms of the issues that we're raising with BBI, there's an issue of their financial sustainability, the issue of their ability to generate new revenue, the corporate plan with the performance agreements or performance targets of key executives in the organization, and to make sure that there will be consequence management. And those matters, we are correcting with them, and we'll see an improvement in the next quarter. That's my submission on BBI. Chairperson, I'll then request the submission from the DDG responsible for corporate service for entity oversight and performance. On the others, following the same thread, it will be quicker. Then we can, you can then do the questions directly to the entities when we are done. And I'll request to be excused because I realize I'm being sent messages that it's my time to present at the NCCC. Thank you.
Yeah, yes, Minister, I take it that you would have asked that we have the admin coming in to speak to the other points. That's how I understood you. So I thought you are then taking it straight to the department's side for the actions. Yes.
Thank you, Chair. I'll hand over to the ADG and DDG Silembe to take over and then present, if you may grant me permission to go and present at the NCCC.
Yes. Yes, please, you can do that. Thank you.
Okay.
A very good morning, Chair, and good morning to the honourable members on the platform. Also like to greet the chair, CEOs, as well as the colleagues from the SOC, and as well as from our sister department, if they're still on the platform. As Minister and Deputy Minister have introduced, I'm joined by DDG Shalembe, as well as DDG Manzini, who's the responsible for corporate services, along with our CFO, the Acting Chief Director, SPM, as the Chief Director, Mr. Osman, had left the department in January this year. And we also have colleagues on the platform from the offices of the Minister, the Deputy Minister, as well as the DGO, and they're led by the Chief of Staff. Chair, I would need to be guided by you whether we can start with perhaps the department's presentation before we move to the entities, or can we continue with the entities as the minister has already started the introductions as well as presentations on their performance. Madam Chair, we can't hear you.
I thought I'm audible. I'm not sure what's the problem. Maybe it's connectivity on this side. So that there's no load shedding here yet. Yeah, but I don't know what could be the problem. Yes, I think it's...
Okay, Chair, I'll ask then DDG Shalembe to just continue with the other entities, continuing with FPB as well as the CASA. Then I will come in to then present the department's performance in the two quarters.
Yes, proceed, please.
Thank you.
DDG Shalembe.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. And good morning as well to all the chairpersons, CEOs, and other colleagues from the department and the entities of the department. I'm going to continue from where the minister has left in terms of entities, but maybe not follow necessarily the alphabetic order that the minister has started with. I'm going to follow on with the SABC, which is going to be then the second entity we present after the minister has presented FBBI. So with the SABC, with regards to the implementation of the turnaround plan of the SABC, at the time the SABC had completed 87% of initiatives related to the turnaround plan, while the remaining 13% are still in progress. I can now inform that the performance on the turnaround plan now exceeds 90%. as we speak. In the main, the SABC still needs to complete some initiatives under the financial and sustainability, as well as transmission digital migration pillars. It also should be noted that SABC is 23 months. It was then at the time 23 months into the 36-month implementation period. I move to the non-financial and financial performance for the period ended at 30 June 2021.
Chair, I'm sorry to disturb.
That's Honorable Machozo?
Yes, the presentation is not flagged on, so we're actually not seeing it on the screen.
DDG Shalembe.
Apologies, Chairperson.
Was also in the dark area.
Apologies for my dark background as well, Chair. That's the way my computer is placed where I'm presenting from. Chair, we thought the presentations have been submitted by the entities, and we are presenting the summary of those presentations, and we are not flagging the summaries per se in the same way that the minister was taking through just the summary of what is in the presentation. I am also talking through the summary of the presentation, Chairperson, if that is acceptable.
No, I want to agree that we proceed, because the members did receive the presentations and we agreed that you are giving more of the summary of such. And when there are specific questions to be asked, then the entities can respond to the specific questions at the time based on the presentation we proceed. Can proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. From a non-financial perspective, Chairperson, the SABC achieved 47 of the key targets in quarter one in terms of the approved corporate plan. In context, the SABC planned to deliver a total of 51 key targets in the first quarter, of which 24 are achieved, and the remaining 27 targets are not achieved. This performance outcome is mainly attributed to capacity constraints in critical functional areas as the impact of COVID-19 lockdown regulations that affected revenue performance and disrupted normal operations at the public broadcaster. From a financial performance point of view, the SABC reported that revenue performance was below budget by 170.3 million. As a result of underperformance on TV advertising revenue, OTT revenue, content exploitation, as well as TV license fee collections, which were below by 49 million. The SABC also reported an underspending of 409 million due to savings on employee costs, content amortization costs, broadcast costs, and other operational costs. This translated into an operating net loss of 28 million for the quarter under review, mainly driven by poor revenue performance on public broadcasting service platforms such as SABC2, SAFM, RSG, Radio 2000, and Mozambique FM. While the SABC was in a healthy financial position at 30 June 2021, revenue growth and profitability remain key risk factors to the going concern status of the public broadcaster. As a result, the going concern assessment risk of the SABC remained high, and the public broadcaster must work on improving these factors. The SABC board was stable at 30 June 2021, comprising of 11 non-executive directors and 3 executive directors. There is one board vacancy, of which we understand, Chair, Parliament is currently in the process of filling the vacancy, through the portfolio committee legislative processes. All three executive positions were filled as at then June 2021. The revenue versus expenditure performance translated into a net operating loss of 28 million for quarter one as at the end of June 2021 against the projected net loss of 276 million. It is evident that the quarterly performance far exceeded the comparable period and is in an early sign that the implementation, and that is an early sign that the implementation of the turnaround plan is beginning to transform the financial status of the SABC and yielding positive returns from an operational point of view. There was an irregular expenditure amounting to 20.5 million, mainly caused by the incorrect evaluation of bids and tenders above 30 million with no subcontracting requirement. While this is an improvement in comparison to the previous financial year, we are still concerned as a department about the continuous incurrence of irregular expenditure, given that this is one of the unresolved matters hindering the ATSA to issue a progressive audit opinion for the SABC. Food and waste bill expenditure amounted to 1 million as of 30 June, mainly driven by rental of unoccupied space for the Mpumalanga province. It is worthy to note that revenue growth and profitability remain key risk factors to the going concern status of the SABC. Moving on to quarter two, briefly, Chairperson, the SABC achieved 46.3% of the key targets set out in the approved corporate plan for the period ending 30 September 2021. The SABC planned to deliver a total of 54 key targets in the second quarter, of which 25 were achieved. But the remaining 29 targets were not achieved, and according to the SABC, the poor performance outcome is mainly attributed to capacity constraints again in the supply chain department, which had a negative impact of delivery of projects in the digital strategic pillar. Performance again was affected by COVID-19 lockdown regulation that affected revenue performance and disrupted normal operations at the public broadcast. Total revenue amounted to 1.2 billion in the second quarter against a budget of 1.6 billion, resulting in a revenue shortfall of 397.9 million. The constrained revenue performance was mainly driven by shortfalls on TV advertising revenue, which amounted to 289.7 million at the end of quarter two. The SABC reported that there were cutbacks by marketers in some sectors, e.g. tourism industry, amidst the threat of the fourth wave of COVID-19 infection. TV license fee collections were 22.8% below the quarterly target, due to a decline in compliant TV license holders. The department remains concerned that there is still, no movement on OTT revenue, of which the SABC has indicated that its OTT deals are not generating revenue, due to delays in the installation of the relevant technologies to enable the realization of revenue from the Telkom One deal. Total expenditure amounted to 1.380 billion against a budget of 1.825 billion in the second quarter, resulting in an under expenditure of 445.2 million. The under expenditure was mainly due to vacancies, content amortization costs, broadcast costs, and other operational expenditure. Employee costs remained the largest cost drivers, accounting for 38.3% of total expenditure by the end of the quarter. irregular expenditure amounted to 36.1 million, mainly caused by incorrect evaluation of goods and tenders above 30 million, with no subcontracting and requirements as chairperson. Moving on to summarize the AG findings, the SABC also reported that the AGSA issued 94 audit findings in 2020-21 audit report, which is a slight decrease from the 98 raised in the previous audit period. The SABC reported that 31 out of the 94 findings were resolved by 30 September 2021, and this constitutes 33% of audit findings emanating from the 2020-21 financial year. Chairperson, I will move on then to the post office, SAPO. SAPO submitted both its first and second quarter performance report, which are based on the board approved corporate plan and APP for 2021-22 financial period. With respect to quarter one, non-financial and financial performance for the period, SAPO continued to struggle in the first quarter of the current financial period, wherein the entity indicated that its overall state of affairs for the quarter is exacerbated by lack of funding and the impact of the third wave COVID-19. In addition, the entity is struggling to collect funds from their customers. From a total of 15 KPIs, SAPO has achieved 7 KPIs, resulting in an overall performance of 47%. There has been an improvement recorded in the performance from a 24% from the previous quarter, that is quarter four of the previous financial year. The post office recorded revenues of 814 million for quarter one, which is below budget by 30%. SAPO attributes the lower than projected revenue performance to, amongst others, the lingering effects of COVID-19 lockdown and the effect of unpaid suppliers who in turn withdraw their services from the post office. As at the end of June 2021, SAPO's cash flow remained under pressure due to expenses continuing to exceed revenues, with outstanding statutory payments amounting to 1.8 billion. The ongoing and critical debt for SAPO includes amounts owed to SARS, Medipost, Medical Aid, and the Retirement Fund, respectively. The 126 million Universal Service Obligation funding for the period ending 30 June 2021 was utilized, with 77 million net of debt allocated to USO rural branches and 33 million allocated to main delivery. SAPO has realized a net loss of 563 million during the first quarter. Expenses continue to exceed revenues, resulting in severe pressure on cash flow position. It had originally been intended that the department would appoint a service provider or a team of turnaround experts to assist the post office develop the turnaround plan, but it was subsequently decided that these experts will no longer be appointed, as the post office can on its own develop this turnaround plan. Accordingly, SAPO was requested to come up with plans to stem out the losses and holistically address the challenges at hand. SAPO was thus requested to come up with the report on reimagined entity, building the post office of tomorrow strategy. This was also considering the severity of the liquidity risk. I think I can inform the committee that this strategy has since been developed, and from January this year, it was submitted to the Minister for ultimate approval. With respect to quota two, Chairperson, from a total of 15 key performance indicators measured, SAPO has achieved 3 KPIs, resulting with a deteriorating overall performance of 20%, which is of great concern to us. This is a sharp decline of 27% compared to the prior quarter. The target for the resolution of material audit findings is 50% by the end of quarter two, and this was not achieved. The detailed audit report from the AG was not yet received by the end of quarter two of 2021-2022. SAPO committed that once the detailed audit report from the AG is received, the resolution of material findings will be expedited, in order that their annual target of 100% resolution of material audit findings is achieved. The entity further submitted that work was continuing with the aim of addressing the matter and improving audit outcome for 2021 financial year. Revenues of 813 million for quarter two is below budget by 409 million. Contributing to the cash deficit. The recorded expenditure for the period is 1.539 billion, which is below the projected 1.732 billion by 193 million, which is a positive move. Unfortunately, expenditure continues to outstrip revenue by 726 million, which is 47%. Staff costs remain the main driver at 934 million, that is 61%. Other key cost drivers include property, security, and technology costs. Continued poor revenue performance is the main concern, which resulted in the net loss position of 591 million against the projected net loss of 366 million. The company posted a year-to-date at the time net loss of 1.155 billion. SAPO attributes the poor performance to, amongst others, the ongoing cash flow crisis, challenging operating environment because of the effect of COVID-19. Postal services and courier parcel revenue streams continue to perform under budget due to low volumes, with revenues that are 42% and 72% under budget, respectively. Financial services revenue of 599 million is below the budget by 155 million, with a year-to-date decline of 9 million, 1%. Financial services revenue includes 161 million for SASA transaction fees and SASA COVID-19 fees. Motor vehicle license revenue of 125 million, property revenue of 25 million, and courier revenue of 11 million. Chairperson, if I may move on to CETA. CETA has a number of targets for quarter one, 17 targets and 16 targets for quarter two. It achieved 13 targets in quarter one and 12 targets in quarter two, resulting in 76.4% in quarter one and 75% in quarter two. Chairperson, we are noting that CETA's performance has improved a lot when compared to what it used to be in the past few years. The agency used to achieve around 30% on its target, but now, since the takeover of the interim MD or executive caretaker, the agency's performance has per quarter has improved to around 75%. on our branch. With respect to financial performance, CETA is in a very healthy financial position. Although the EBITDA and revenue targets were not met for the reporting period under review, quarter one and quarter two, the agency has made a cumulative profit of 361 million and 428.4 million respectively for the two quarters. It has also very healthy solvency ratios of 3.16 and 3.43 respectively, as well as healthy again liquidity ratios of 2.76 and 3.13, which indicates that CETA has sufficient funds to cover for all its liabilities, both in the long and the short term. If I were to move on to NEMISA Chairperson, NEMISA achieved 15, which is 83% of the 18 targets planned for quarter one. And for quarter two, NEMISA achieved again 15, 83% of the 18 targets planned for quarter two. For quarter one, the first tranche of operational funds amounted to 12.5 million, which were transferred to NEMISA. The digital skills first tranche amounted to 12.1 million. According to GRAP, the generally recognized accounting practice, funding allocated for a specific purpose, in this case digital skills, can only be recorded as income when it is used. Thus, funding received but not used is shown as a liability in the books of NEMISA. Thus, in the financials for quarter one, it is reflected that digital skills income amounted to 5.9 million due to reduced training being offered. Other income, including project income and interest for quarter one, amounted to 500,000. Procurement of goods and services is done mainly from SMMEs, which is 73%, which is the same as in quarter one and quarter two, and 27% from larger corporations. Of the 4.4 million spent on procurement of services, which is 67%, which is 3 million, was spent with a BEE company. There was no fruitless and wasteful expenditure as well as irregular expenditure for the first quarter at NEMISA. The total expenditure at the end of quarter two amounted to 19.4 million with overhead 12.2 million and digital skills 7.2 million. The underspending on digital skills funding remained a concern. At the end of the quarter, which is quarter two, a net surplus of 900,000, which was 19.5 million minus 19.4 million expenditure, was recorded. Procurement of goods and services is done mainly from SMMEs in this quarter, 90%, and 10% from larger corporations. Of the 6% of the 6.8 million rand spent on the procurement of services, 6.1 million rand was spent with the company. Again, there was no irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure for the second quarter for the year. Moving on to USASA Chairperson. USASA, the agency, had committed to 6 planned targets in quarter one and quarter two, respectively. In both quarters, the agency achieved the planned target, which equates to 67% achievement. Cumulatively, USASA reported non-achievement of 33% in both quarter one and quarter two of the financial year 2021-22. The funds transferred to USASA for 6 months, a period covering quarter one and quarter two, amount to 75.1 million rand. USASA's expenditure for the 6 month period amounted to 38.9 million rand. At the end of the 6 month period, the agency reported a surplus to the amount of 36.25 million rand. The reported surplus is attributed to reduced zero spending on most of the agency's planned expenditure items. Moving on to USAF, which is part of USASA, but responsible for delivery on key projects. USAF, the fund, planned to deliver on 7 targets in quarter one and quarter two, respectively. But the fund achieved 29 and 14% of performance, respectively, for quarter one and quarter two. This reflects an achievement of 2 out of the 7 planned targets in quarter one, and achievement of 1 out of the planned 7 targets in quarter two. Cumulative performance at quarters one and two is 21%, which is achievement of 3 out of the 14 planned targets. The pure performance is reported in quarter one, worsened in quarter two. Cumulative revenue for the 6 month period, quarter one and quarter two, amounted to 296.6 million rand. This comprised of government transfers to the amount of 268.25 million and 28.3 million rand from interest received. The fund's expenditure for the 6 month period amounts to 4.2 million rand, which resulted in surplus to the amount of 292.3 million rand. The main contributor to the under expenditure during the two quarters was due to the non-spending on key USAF projects. Moving on to Dr. Zedna, Chairperson. In terms of the 2021-22 annual performance plan, Zedna achieved 11 out of targets planned in quarter one and achieved 10 out of the 12 targets planned in quarter two. In quarter one, Zedna generated revenue amounting to 5.2 million rand through the ZA Central Registry. In addition to this amount, Zedna generated additional income amounting to 258,859 rand through interest earned. The total revenue generated for the quarter amounted to 5.4 million rand. The total expenditure incurred for the period under review, that is the first quarter, amounted to 3.5 million rand. The cost drivers are mainly attributed to the compensation of employees and other related costs. Even though the compensation of employees has been identified as a cost driver, it is important to note that there has been an underspending of 1 million rand in salaries. There has also been savings in relation to international travel. This as a result of the ICANN conference, which has, due to COVID-19 restrictions, placed on international travel. The other funds were spent on other operational activities. Zedna recorded net surplus amounted to 1.9 million rand. In quarter two, Zedna generated revenue amounting to 5.6 million rand through the central registry. In addition to this amount, Zedna generated additional income amounting to 317,107 39 rand through interest and investment. The total revenue thus amounting to 5.9 million for the end of the quarter. The total expenditure incurred for the period under the revenue for Dozetna amounted to 3.6 million rand. The cost drivers again were the compensation of employees and other related costs. Again, there was an under expenditure still on the compensation of employees of just under a million rand of 869,000 rand. There has also been savings in relation to international travel, as already indicated, due to restrictions placed on international travel. The other funds were spent on other operational activities, resulting in a net surplus of 2.3 million rand. Moving on to Centec Chairperson. Centec reported that the COVID-19-induced lockdown continued to impact heavily on the ability to conduct its business during the quarter. Nevertheless, the entity continued to post an impressive performance with 7 out of 11 targets achieved for this quarter, amounting to a 70% achievement rating. The 3 targets that could not be achieved relate to 50 connected sites for broadband network coverage, 330,000 set-top box installation, and 54 analog switch-off sites. The company also achieved both revenue and profitability quarterly targets. Net profit after tax was 31 million. Above budget of 7 million. And the earnings before interest and tax exceeded budget by 6.7 million rand, which is 66%, both boosted by higher than budgeted revenues and reduced operating expenditure. No maintenance, consulting fees, transport and travel costs, as well as marketing activities assisted in containing the expenditure for the period. Continuing business revenue was 2% above budget of 316 million rand as a result of content and multimedia positive sales performance, with a cash balance of 2 billion rand, the entity was in good financial position. For quarter two, Centec had 11 targets. 7 of the 11 targets were attained, translating to, again, a 70% achievement rate. The 3 targets relating to 100 connected sites, 480,000 set-top boxes installation, and 92 analog switch off sites were also not achieved in the previous quarter. On the target of 50 connected sites, Centec is considering a catch-up plan for SAPO, DCDT, and SA Connect phase. The installation of STBs relates to a SAPO system downtime, no automated PODs were issued as SAPO was doing them manually. The system was expected to be restored by end of September 2021. Furthermore, USASA is reviewing the installation fees due to complaints received by installers. Moving on to ICASA, Chairperson. ICASA reported that it planned to deliver 25 key targets in the first quarter. The authority achieved 16 targets and the remaining 9 were not achieved. This constituted 64% achievement for quarter one. In the main, ICASA reported that it did not achieve its targets related to the policy research and analysis, engineering and technology, as well as regions and consumer affairs programs. The said programs constitute the core mandate of the regulator, linked to the key priorities of the DCDT, and non-delivery on these targets under those programs is a major concern to us, especially engineering and technology. The ongoing court interdicts were attributed as the main reason for non-achievement of targets related to the process of licensing, the high demand spectrum, and the wireless open access network, the WOAN. Other reasons which were attributed to non-achievement of targets are related to the project plan for monitoring of local government elections that could not be finalized due to the date of the elections not being proclaimed. The authority proclaimed that the appropriate mitigation measures were being implemented to ensure that the targets that have been missed are achieved in the subsequent quarters without jeopardizing achievement in the targets planned for the second quarter and beyond. ICASA reported that it collected total revenue of 420.8 million rand against an annual target of 1.8 billion, which translates to 23%. For the quarter under review, the authority spent 18.1% of its budget due to changes in operations and spending patterns occasioned by COVID-19 pandemic. ICASA did not incur any irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure during the quarter under review. In addition to the above, the regulator reported that there were several litigations that impeded its ability to deliver key programs. These include the review application instituted to declare its decision not to renew a glass broadcasting service license unlawful and set aside. The authority pursued a settlement negotiation with all litigants in the Telkom SA SOC Limited and others, and the MTN Pty Limited and others matters in an effort to find an out-of-court settlement to the matter and allow the process of the licensing of high demand spectrum and WOAN operator to proceed. For quarter two, Chairperson, ICASA reported that it planned to deliver a total of 42 targets under review, of which the authority achieved 32, which translates to 76%, and did not achieve 10, translating to 24% of the key target. This translates into an overall performance of 76%, while 24% of targets were not achieved. Again, the major areas of non-performance were in the licensing and compliance, which is 6 targets, policy research and analysis, 3 targets, and engineering and technology programs, which is one target. The authority's performance demonstrates an upward trend compared to the previous quarter of 64%, with an improvement margin of 12 percentage points. With regards to license fees collection, the authority collected a total of 766.4 million rand from operators against a budget of 959.3 million, resulting in a variance of 192.9 million during the quarter under review. It is therefore evident that the concerted efforts by operators to avert declaring a correct figure and tempering ICASA's ability to collect targeted regulatory fees. The department is of the view that ICASA Council must develop a revenue enhancement strategy that encompasses and mitigates against all these shortcomings. From an expenditure performance point of view, ICASA spent a total of 207.4 1.5 million rand for operational expenditure during the second quarter. Moving on to FPB, Chairperson, which I believe is the last one. FPB reported that it achieved 71% performance rating against the targets planned for the period, although it was a difficult trading period underlined by continued disruption of business activity. Despite these difficult trading conditions, it has performed well, for it has managed to achieve a total of 12 out of 17 planned targets for the quarter, which is a 71% performance. While the entity attributes non-performance to the level 4 COVID lockdown restriction, there was equally poor planning and capacity challenges in the research and advocacy unit, which led to some of the targets not being achieved. Revenues from the regulated fees also declined during the period. FPB collected 23% of the projected 25% of the revenue, and expenditures were lower at 21% against the annual budget, mainly due to savings in general administration costs as a result of the continuing COVID-19 lockdown restrictions. The FPB has planned to deliver a total of 15 key targets in the second quarter. The entity achieved 7 targets, and the remaining 8 targets were not achieved, and this constitutes 47% achievement. It declined from 60% achievement in the first quarter. The National Treasury approved the FPB's request for the retention of cash surplus of 15.1 million emanating from the previous financial year. The entity was required to spend these surplus funds on operations and contractual commitments, as well as to fund the enhancement of online content regulation system, which is a core operational system for FPB's outreach program. Total operational expenditure amounted to 45.6 million rand against the total revenue of 56.4 million rand, resulting into a net surplus of 10.3 million rand. The analysis of the second quarter report reveals that this entity continued to operate as a going concern, as demonstrated by solvency ratio. There were no new incidents of irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure during the second quarter. Chairperson, that said, the entity was in a good financial position, as underscored by the positive liquidity and solvency ratio and the cash balance of 38 million at the end of the quarter. That will bring me to the end of my presentation, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG Selembe. I hope I'm audible, honorable members. I do see that there's an indication of my network not really that strong, it's weak. So DDG, acting DG, you can then come in.
Thank you, Chair. Ours, the department, will be very brief, as the presentation and the documents have been submitted, Chair. So just to indicate, Chair, that there was an underachievement of 16 of the 39 targets that were planned for the second quarter. Chair, just if you can move on to the next slide, please. I would like to just slide 6, just to briefly highlight the ones that were underachieved and to give, therefore, the portfolio committee assurance that work has actually progressed since the quarter 2. with regards to the BRICS position paper that was outstanding, just to indicate that the position paper was therefore submitted and approved after the second quarter. We advanced our position at the BRICS ministerial meeting, and an outcomes report has already been concluded. With regards to the BRICS Institute for Future Networks, Chair, I think we have appraised portfolio committee previously. In our participation in BRICS, we seek to ensure that South Africa leverages in terms of the capacity as well as the strategic alliance with other BRICS members in as far as looking at research in the future technologies. What we have then done initially, it was supposed to be designated to the CSIR. At the last minute, they came with a huge bill, which obviously was not budgeted for. We have therefore now looked at a revised strategic direction in this, and we're working with our entities running this program under the various programs that we have in the department, such as the SA Connect, and also working with the various research institutions around the country as well. On the investment conference, Chair, we have taken a stance in as far as partnering with presidents and the DTIC in the hosting of the SA investment conference that is taking place later on this month. The ICT will have a separate build-up session, and that is basically then our collaboration in an effort to make sure that as a country we have one particular platform in as far as attracting investment. Chair, moving on the South African Post Office Amendment Bill, and I think next week we'll be able to elaborate further on this, just to indicate that the bill, though it was delayed, we have subsequently received the inputs from the state law advisors that gave us the go-ahead to then proceed to process this through cabinet for public comment. We tabled it at the cabinet committee last week, and we're waiting there for cabinet to give its endorsement for onward consultation. And then thereafter, once we've received the comments, we will then retable it. Part of the delay also required us to align with this support strategy for the post office of tomorrow. And I want to give the assurance of members that we have aligned the bill to the strategy itself, and will support, therefore, in the turnaround and the stability of SAPO. On the data and the cloud, we've received numerous inputs after public consultation on the data and the cloud. Chair, I just want to indicate that we've done extensive consultation rounds on this, and we've met with all parties. Certainly others, they've got commercial interests, but we had to make sure that we look at it in the best interest of the country, and also building on the capacity for the state, and especially noting that data is now the new currency. And therefore, the data and the cloud policy is now ready for tabling to cabinet within as we close this financial year. And then with regards to the digital economy master plan, this target was in process. What we needed to do was to convene the executive oversight committee. There has been numerous other players who have come to the fore expressing interest. And therefore, as a department, we've had to revise the master plan itself, ensuring that it incorporates all the interested parties. And therefore, there's still further work that is being done, and it would therefore be revised and reworked in as far as the master plan is concerned. And similarly with the ICT SMME strategy, Chair, we had to also take into consideration the priorities both of the department as well as the country in as far as transformation and ensuring a wider participation, especially by SMMEs. We've taken that into consideration, aligned it therefore with other programs that we're currently implementing. One of those that I expressly want to highlight is the promoting local products within government. And we are therefore also going to, coupled with this, take on a proposal strategy to cabinet to also then encourage the uptake of local products being used by government as well as within by industry as well. Chair, I just want to quickly touch on the regulatory reform bills. These ones, as you'd know, talk to the regulatory bill, the state digital infrastructure, as well as the repurposing of CETA. The rationalization of our state-owned entities, we've been looking at that when the minister and the deputy minister came in the second quarter. They engaged extensively with the entities, and we have asked, therefore, the input from them, as well taking into consideration the work that is being done by the Department of Public Enterprise. And therefore, we had to look at the revised business cases, and the work is proceeding in as far as the rationalization of Centec as well as DBI, and equally the regulators, and also the repurposing of CETA. We took a stance, therefore, Chair, that this, because it's ongoing work, we will then defer it into the business plan of the department. But I just want to again indicate that as far as the business cases are concerned, that work has also been concluded. On the cost, apologies, we seem to have lost the slide, but if I may still proceed. With regards to cost to communicate, another important program in terms of reducing the cost of communication in the country, there's ongoing work. Chair, we had a problem with regards to delays in the department on the procurement processes, but we therefore took on up ourselves to work together with ICASA, Competition Commission, in as far as assessing the cost or reduction of cost. I'm happy to indicate, as it has been, that we continue to look at this, and there has been improvement where we've seen a 33% reduction across all the mobile operators in as far as cost of data, and we continue therefore to study this. And as has been announced and what is then taking place under the spectrum, we will also continue to monitor this work, working with the regulator as well. On the post-bank amendment bill, Chair, there was delays, but again, I want to give the assurance to the portfolio committee that please expect that before the end of this month, March, we will therefore be tabling the amended post-bank bill to cabinet, to parliament, then for your onward processing. So we are quite happy that this work is finally getting towards the end. With regards to the SA Connect, Chair, you will recall that the minister made an announcement that we have took a revised model to cabinet, and that is basically what we are implementing. We're happy that we have established a steering committee, and there's a project managers that have been appointed from both Centec and BBI, but also most importantly is that the revised model ensures a wider participation of players, including your ISPs, WEBs, as well as your SMMEs in the ecosystem. And therefore, also the mobile operators have got their social obligations in as far as connecting the government sites. With regards to the digital transformation, we have had engagements with the CSIR, as you know, that they're running the 4IR center for WEF, and therefore our work had therefore to be deferred to ensure that there is an alignment and there's no more duplication amongst government spheres. And lastly, on the issues related to your BDM, Chair, again, we're happy to announce that we took also a revised approach, having been endorsed by Cabinet. We have successfully switched off the SABC transmitters in the 5 provinces, and we are continuing in therefore to also switch off the 4 provinces aligned to the 31st March 2022 deadline in terms of the ASO. There will be further announcements as expected, including today with regards to the ASO being gazetted, tomorrow, and then also to ensure that we do proceed according to what we have committed. With regards to the department and SOC programs reflective of GDYC, there were delays, Chair, but I want to indicate that this program is now ongoing, and we are having both SOC programs and as well as wider stakeholder engagements aligning to the targets that have been set by the office in the ministry in presidency, as the department in presidency, and also working with the Department of Social Development. Chair, before I hand over to the CE, just to indicate that we have also filled the board appointments in as far as CENTEC. Chair, CENTEC's interim board cabinet approved from December 2021 to November 2022. And the reason that it is a shorter period is that it is pending the rationalization of CENTEC and BBI. And then equally, Chair, cabinet also approved the constitution of the CETA board for a three-year period from January of this year. And we also, the minister has approved the extension of the USASA interim board chair as well, just to assist the department with the winding down. We are also filling in the vacancies in the SOCs, and the entities themselves can further elaborate with regards to the management positions in those, but we're just indicating to the portfolio committee that we are ensuring that we are filling those. Lastly, we've had advertised for the vacancies in the SAPO as well as in the Postbank board, and the SAPO board, the advert closed on the 28th of February, so we're busy finalizing the list in terms of shortlisting. And then with regards to the Postbank board, we also advertised this on the 7th of January, and there is a process that we are undertaking in line with the Postbank Act, where then there will be a nominations committee that will deal with the shortlisting, and then for then onward submission of those lists for the fit and proper assessment with the AG, and as well as then to be processed through the South African Reserve Bank as well for the final appointment. Chair, may I then quickly hand over to the CFO to just quickly take us through the financials. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, ADG, Honorable Chair. I'll take you through the financial presentation. For the last, in the first two quarters, Chair, the budget that, to the original budget that was appropriated to the department amounts to 3.7 billion. And by end of September, the department has spent 1.4 billion, and which is translated to 39.1%. And Chair, mainly this expenditure is due to the compensation of employees that were made, the transfers to the entities, as well as the monthly commitments that were paid. Chair, I must indicate that with regards to the goods and services, we do have the SA Connect funds that are appropriated under goods and services, and it also amounts to 46% of the goods and services budget. So that's why under goods and services, you will see the spending is very low. It was very low at the time, Chair, and as well as the advance that was paid to BBI was utilized only after the second quarter, but to date we can report that this allocation has been utilized by the two entities mandated with the SA Connect. Next slide. Yeah, Chair, these are the transfers that were made by the end of the second quarter. And under USASA, I just wanted to indicate that there were instructions to stop the transfer, but this matter has since been resolved, and also all the transfers to USASA have since been made.
this matter was resolved with National Treasury. In the next slide. Okay, Chair, the next slide indicates the audit action plan. And just briefly, it's just to indicate that by end of September, we were sitting at 32%, but we can indicate that to date, we are over 60% of the resolved findings. We are monitoring these findings on a monthly basis, Chair. And there are findings under HR that have been resolved, and also under finance as well that have been resolved, that moved to green. And that's why now the percentage has significantly increased, Chair. Chair, just briefly, it's just to indicate that we still have those cases. We're still addressing those cases of irregular expenditure, and we are really pushing on our side to finalize all these cases and submit to National Treasury, as well as the policies. 90% of the policies have been approved, and it's only those that need to be signed. And now we, this finding is now under in progress. It has been moved to yellow. So there has been improvement in terms of this slide, Chair. Chair, we still also have that finding in terms of posts that have not been filled, that have been vacant for over 12 months. And these posts are awaiting the finalization of the organizational structure. So, Chair, this is the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. That concludes our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. The deputy for the presentation. Honorable members would now engage the presentation as directed by the minister in terms of their approach to the presentation. And that where there are specific questions that the entities would want to respond to, those will be responded to. As we'll be guided by them. I will now take hands from members who would want to contribute to the item at this point. Hajira, you'd assist me on your side. I see Honorable Dr. Basop on my side. His hand is up. As I say, you'll assist me in that regard.
My last chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Malatsi would then follow. If there are other hands, I'll still take them.
Ms. Budlani, Chair.
Right. Okay. Let's just follow those hands for now. Honorable Basop, Honorable Malatsi, Honorable Polani, and I will then look at the other hands that may follow. In that order, Honorable Basop, you are now recognized.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable members, as well as the officials of the department. In appreciating the presentations, Chair, mine is just a comment on two entities. The first one is SABC, as well as SAPO. On SABC, Chair, in terms of the presentation, there is a relevant kind of improvement in terms of the performance of the entity under the year on the year under review, which is very much appreciated. But Chair, given that this entity for a long time has been on the spotlight for wrong reasons, perhaps as the committee, if we can be taken on board to say, indeed, the entity as we speak is on track and in terms of executing its mandate as per legislation, if we can get that kind of confirmation, I'll be very much pleased, Chairperson. Then the second one is around SAPO. Again, in terms of the presentation, we are being told that under review, there is a slight improvement as well. Again, that is appreciated, Chairperson and members. But in the presentation, there is a mention of the lack of funding, the struggling to collect funds from its clients, the challenges around SARS, COVID, 19 lockdown, etc. Now, perhaps we need to be told here, Ukuthi, what is the situation in as far as saving this institution? Because all of us here, we know for a fact that this entity has got a challenge of funding. And again, given the fact that it for me is very much important in terms of its allocation, because we'll find that in all our areas, especially in rural areas, we do have the post office, and the services that are being provided there for our communities are very much important as far as I'm concerned. But say, as we speak, from my area where I'm coming from, and other areas as well, we will find stories that the post offices are closed for a number of reasons. One, they are not paying the rents. In some areas, the electricity has been switched off by municipalities because they are not paying, and etc. Now, which tells you that as much as in terms of this presentation, we are being told that there is a slight improvement, but there are challenges as far as I'm concerned. And therefore, for me, Chair, as this body, that is ourselves as oversight body, we need to take a firm decision to say a recommendation which says there should be a concerted effort in saving this institution. As I've indicated, Chair, that for me is very much important because is assisting our people in rural areas where there are no banks, where people are getting their grants, etc. So there is no way, absolutely no way, Chair, that we can allow the situation as it is now. I am saying that, therefore, we need to take a bold step to say there should be a concerted effort in ensuring that resources are put to this kind of entity in order to save it. So, Chair, so far that's my take in as far as these presentations are concerned. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Malatsi. You are recognized. You can proceed.
Thanks, Chair. I just have two questions, and it relates to both the Films and Publications Board and the Post Office. So perhaps starting where Honorable Basopu ended. I mean, if you look at the presentation in detail regarding the financial situation of the Post Office, it indicates it posted a loss of over 563 million. It owes the Post Bank 2.2 billion. There is a moratorium that's affecting, you know, a procurement moratorium currently. And given the history that is obvious to everyone on this committee, I just want to get the sense, you know, in terms of both from the entity and the department as to what is the plan with regards to getting the funding that the Post Office needs in order to fulfill its basic mandate, because currently it's unable to fulfill its mandate As the previous speaker indicated, more and more branches are being closed up. There is a reported high number of thefts happening at these branches. They are losing staff also. And for me, you know, there are two critical issues that affect it. One is obviously you need the funding in order to address many of the problems that are associated with it. But secondly, there is a human resource element to it, you know, good governance and stable leadership in there. But the most primary one at this point is, given what we all know regarding the financial struggles of the post office, what is the plan with regard to getting, you know, the financial rescue that it needs in order for it to perform the way it should be performing? Will there be an application being made for yet another bailout in order to stabilize the post office? And with regard to the Films and Publications Board, there is an attribute being made to the relative improvement in terms of performance. But I think one of the critical things that is holding it back is the level of vacancies at, you know, executive or senior management level. And I would appreciate it if we can get a timeline indicating, you know, the period with which those will be filled and what are the steps, you know, that are outstanding towards filling those, if, for instance, the steps have already been initiated, so that we can have an accurate measure of some of the progress that's happening, since that, you know, these reports cover over two quarters. And the real measure will obviously be at the end of the financial year. But I think there are some immediate actions, such as the filling of those critical vacancies, that can be initiated so that it can give us confidence that we are moving in the right direction. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Malaxis. Honourable Bodlani, you can proceed. You are recognized.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, taking a leaf from your opening remarks in terms of the department being able to give us update while we are receiving the first and second quarter reports, to say they should also try and give us the status quo as things stand. The elephant in the room, I think the elephant in the country, is the sale of the spectrum auction. Without compromising the process, what information can the department share with what is happening today, considering how far we have come? If you think of 15 years, it is a long time. We've come a long way. As a department, can they just take us into confidence so that we also understand what today's events mean? Thank you.
If there's no other hand, I will then give an opportunity for responses at this point. And then I will check if members would want to make follow-up questions.
Chair, I'm back on the platform.
Thank you, Honourable Deputy Minister. You wanted to come in first or after?
But Chair, let me just direct how we should be responding to your questions. I think basically there is a question on SABC, SAPO, and the Films and Publication Board, and the auctioning of the spectrum. So I think we let's allow the SABC leadership to talk to the first question by Honorable Dr. Basopu, and I will ask the CEO of SAPO, and I know that the acting deputy chair is also on the platform, just to talk a little bit on SAPO, but I would like to come back to the issue of what are the plans regarding SAPO. And then I'll also talk to the Films and Publication Board, what are the plans. But I guess the chair of the board can come in, and then I will deal with that as I close. Lastly, the chairperson of ICASA is on the platform. We will allow him to to talk to us about the auctioning of the spectrum, which is a process that started today. We are very excited about it, Chair. It's finally happening. Yeah, so the chair will share with us the good news, and then I will come back and close. If you allow, Chair, we can start with the SABC, and then we go to SAPO, FPB, and then I'll ICASA, and then I'll come back.
Yes, please proceed in that order.
Greetings, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members of the Committee, and greetings to fellow colleagues from other entities, and greetings to Honourable Deputy Minister. For the question from Dr. Basso, I'm going to request the Group CEO, Mr. Majid Mkawe, to respond on how we're doing with our mandate. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Afternoon, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I think in terms of the question from Honourable Dr. Basopu, in terms of whether we are on track in executing our mandate, indeed, Honourable Doc, we are on track. You may have heard when DDG Shalembe was presenting, indicated that we are at about 87% of the achievement against our turnaround plan. Currently, we're standing at 96% year-to-date on the achievement of the turnaround plan. And that is really linked directly to our mandate of informing, educating, and entertaining South Africans. As you may appreciate, this mandate is unfunded. So we are expected to aggressively chase commercial revenue in the industry in order for us to finance that mandate. We have done this, I must say, against great odds, including a devastating global pandemic. We are operating in a very tough economic environment. Most of our advertisers and our clients, we've seen that the advertising revenue is shrinking. And despite all of these internal and external constraints, we are confident that we'll complete our turnaround plan 1 year in advance. And I think also what is very important to note in terms of ensuring that we fulfill our mandate as the organization, we have stabilized the corporation. We've restored commercial business principles that help us to ensure that we can chase the revenue there. We have been able to address the high cost base historically. And very importantly, we've developed a robust target operating model, as well as the very new organizational structure that has ensured that we're more agile and more competitive because we're operating in a very competitive environment. I do need to highlight also that we have managed to strengthen our balance sheet in terms of reducing the debt, as also ensuring that we have a healthy working capital management in place. All of these, honorable members, are not going to be able to be achieved without the required reform and change within the policy and the legislative spheres. The SABC in this current fiscal, for example, has been able to record profitability in April 2021. Even in Q3, we have been able to record a profit of about 77 million. And we do see that year on year, in the past 3 years, there has been a reduction in net losses. As you all know, turning around an organization is a process. It takes time. It takes a lot of resources and effort. But we do believe, working with the board and all SABC employees, we have been able to future-proof the organization. Where we really need assistance is when it comes to legislative and regulatory provisions, and we have engaged with the shareholder on these. For example, the requirements of the PFMA when it comes to content acquisition, as well as accelerating revenue generation, it does put delays and turnarounds and bureaucracies when it means that we need to ensure that we generate the sufficient revenue. The mass carry regulations have enabled paid televisions to carry our channels at no cost. And this is despite the clear provisions of the Electronic Communications Act. And we're hoping that as we do internally what is expected of the SAPC, we would also see progress when it comes to policy, legislative and regulatory change. All we're saying, honorable members, is that we are indeed, as an organization, committed to fulfilling the public mandate. But it needs to be remembered that this public mandate is not funded, and we need to go into the market and the industry to generate the required revenue. And for us, if we could be helped with these regulatory and legislative reforms, it would definitely unlock the potential of the SAPC to be financially viable in the future. Thank you very much, Chair.
May I come in, Chairperson?
Yes, please proceed, as I said, in that order.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We really note the question that was placed by Honorable Malatsi, and we concur to the extent that we do acknowledge that the number of vacancies in the organization have become a bit of a challenge in enabling us to fulfill especially the new mandate that that has been thrust upon us with the Amendment Act. However, we have been really working hard in trying to fill those gaps, particularly because those vacancies are at a strategic level, from the CEO, who is still not filled, as well as at executive level, CIO, COO, and most recently, an executive of shared services. One of the challenges was the moratorium that was placed on the entity because of the previous strategy on the potential merger, but we have been in discussion with the executive authority and working very closely to address that. And one of the key things that we've agreed needs to be done is to prepare a strategy document for the FPB of the future, because the role of the FPB has significantly changed, and we need to position ourselves as a regulator of the future, which will have significant implications on the entity. And so we are busy finalizing that document internally. It's a huge document, but we have taken on the responsibility to do it internally, despite the limited human resources, but the team is putting in effort to do that. And once that is done, within the next couple of weeks, the executive authority has indicated that they will assist us in terms of lifting some of those moratoriums, which will then enable us to go and recruit the necessary skill that we need at an executive level. I hope that answers that question. Thank you.
Can we get Kapo?
I will switch off the video pretty soon. I just thought I should show it briefly. And thank you very much, DM. Thank you very much, Chair of the Committee. Regarding SAPO, I think it's out there now in the public domain. Without any doubt that financially the institution is in ICU, as was aptly described by a member of SCOPA in a recent visit. In ICU with diminishing supplies of oxygen. Now then, whether you're the board, whether you are the management, whether you are a medical specialist, if you are facing a situation of that nature, there's very little you could achieve without at least even having a stethoscope. And that really is the situation. A point that was made in the recent SCOPA visit was that given what developed to be their understanding
of the issues, as opposed to hearing it the way it is sometimes portrayed elsewhere. And with their understanding of the mandate of the institution, which goes beyond just operating as an ordinary business, because it does have a social mandate. They galvanized us with their sympathies into action. And it placed us on almost on the same vibration with them. And against that background, one is encouraged to hear the comments made here around the need for the post office to be aided financially. As things stand, the picture is uninspiring. There is a depletion of board membership, but something is being done there. But uninspiring as it might be, the question is there a will and is there a motivation to turn things around and chart a course of profitability? And this is the reason then there is the Post Office of Tomorrow strategy, which will be presented to the committee, I think in a few days' time. So together with the country, we pray for stability, we pray for support, we pray for funding. In the past couple of cycles, our prayers did not materialize. But given that something has been done in order to turn things around, and that will be spoken to in the next interface, we do have, we still carry hope that we'll be able to get there. I'm happy to, at this point, call upon the CEO maybe to also sound a sentiment and maybe make a few remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good afternoon to the Honourable Chair of the Committee, Honourable Members, Chairs of the other entities, together with all my colleagues. Chair, I'm also going to switch my video off momentarily. I would also like to ask the Secretariat here to please accept my other gadget. I am knocking on the other side. I do have problems with connectivity, and also that if I do get switched off or something, could I then ask the CFO to step in? But for now, I will continue, Chair. Thank you to the members for the comments and the questions. The Honourable Dr. Basupu spoke about the slight improvement. The slight improvement that we are reporting is purely based on what we've done in the last 11 months since I've been here, where we were focusing a lot on what it is that we need to do. So we then looked at a cost containment exercise and making sure that we do not spend beyond our means, and we are not able to, we don't spend money we do not have. But as everybody would know in business, you cannot save yourself towards sustainability. So the next strategy that we're putting in place, well, of course, concurrently with the other one, is about new revenue generation, where we go out and say we need to find business for SAPO, because you will notice that because of our performance in the past, but also that people have left us in terms of customers and how do we then get them back, etc. So those are looking for new businesses, but also at the same time trying to get those old customers back to SAPO. But the biggest issue around this lack of funding is that we have historical debt which runs into billions of rand, and this debt is old debt. It has been with the company for the last number of years, and it has just not been arrested, so to speak. So even as we have all these great activities that we are doing, new strategies, going out and becoming entrepreneurial in terms of how we run the business, we are hamstrung by this huge debt that is keeping us behind, because you have to try and deal with that debt as well, which is why we thought it was not an unfair proposition to go to the fiscus and try to get some kind of assistance, so that as we put our own new strategies in place, with the new strategy that everybody talks about, the post office of tomorrow, we are very excited by those activities that we've said we will do there. However, we do need to be funded somehow, because that strategy itself is based on some kind of funding. The important thing around why it is that we also think we should be funded is, number one, that we have, as the Honorable Malatsi puts it, the basic mandate of SAPO. The basic mandate of SAPO also calls for us to deliver what we call the USO, the Universal Service Obligation, which means that we have to ensure that services from the SAPO perspective are accessed and accessible to all people, regardless of their economic status and where they are, etc. Now, what has been happening is we did some calculations and we realized that that basic mandate actually cost us just under 1 billion per annum to run. But we have been given some assistance of that money. I mean, this year it's 519 million that we're going to get of that. So it's just under half of what we need. So what has been happening is that because we have to fulfill this mandate, SAPO has been subsidizing this mandate, because we can't then say we're not going to go to the rural areas or this or that because we don't even get the compensation. So there are those issues that we need to deal with. With regards to the issue around we couldn't collect from our clients, one of the first things we did 8-9 months ago, we actually went straight to all the people that owed us money and we collected all our money. But because this report, remember, this is a Q2 report, at the time, we did have an issue with our data center that had collapsed, because also it's old. It has not been refreshed since 2012. We are now in the process of trying to deal with that, also as part of this new strategy. Now, because of that, if our data goes down, we are not able to trade, we are not able to collect money, etc. So that's what it was. Otherwise, the collections at SAPO is one thing that we look at. As at end of Jan, the only money that we were owed by various debtors was 200 million. Also, that was current. So it's not that there's old debt sitting somewhere that we are not collecting. We are experiencing very serious funding challenges. Part of the problem is that we had calculated that because we had gone to our mother department late last year, and we said to them, please, can you assist us? Here's where we are. Here's what the situation is, but this is where we're going, because we can see very clearly how we can turn things around. And we then, with the help of the department, did manage to apply for some kind of funding support from the fiscus in last year in around October, November. We did not get any allocation. Then we thought, okay, well, maybe at the next round, when the Minister of Finance makes the pronouncement, the SAPO issue would be, looked into. Sadly, we also did not get an allocation. But the difficulty there now is that we went to all our creditors, like people we've owed money to for years. Some of them are the people who rent, properties from to be able to do our business. Some of them have really been patient with us. However, now they also are running out of patience. They also are running businesses. Somebody has to pay for what they do. So we had gone to them and said, we have asked for assistance. We have no reason to believe that we will not get any assistance. Can we have a conversation with you at the end of February? Now, we are sitting with a problem now here that says end of February has come and gone, and we still have no light at the end of the tunnel. However, the DM has indicated that he will talk to that going forward. But I just thought it's important for us to paint the picture. The other point, second last point before I stop talking, Chair, is that we are not only asking for funding to be given to us. We are asking for funding, but also we believe the SAPO does have services that it offers, that it can offer to government departments. And all we're asking for basically is work, the opportunity to be able to fulfill those. We know that we've had challenges in terms of how we performed, etc., but those we are focusing a whole lot more on. Some members may have seen that we've now gone online on the online MVL, which is the motor vehicle licensing, and there's been a whole lot of very exciting interest in the program, and we are continuing to do many things. Chair, we will share with the committee when we come present our strategy next week, and so that we can take it from there. But on the municipalities, the only offices currently that are switched off in terms of electricity, maybe water and other utilities, are those that the landlord has decided, you're not paying me my rent, I'm going to switch off the electricity. Otherwise, from a municipality perspective, we took a decision late November last year to pay all municipalities in the country, whatever we had owed them. What we owe any municipality currently is current month's usage. That would be one. But we also took a decision that all the small businesses who have been waiting for the payment from SAPO for so long, let's then focus on that too. And we go through each time we have some money, we then go through which one's the oldest debt, how can we negotiate, et cetera, et cetera. But it is important to note that there is no way that we can save ourselves except if we do get some assistance from the Chair. I've taken the questions all together and I've put them into one. Of course, the issue of human resource is also a big issue at SAPO, especially at the top management level, where we do not have the requisite skill and requisite people that are supposed to be there. There are vacancies at the critical level, but because we cannot afford to pay for them at this point, but also we took a view to say, let's wait until we have the new strategy approved so that we can align our skills that we require to the strategy of the future. Chair, I would pause here, and I hope that I've covered all the questions from both the Honourables Dr. Basopu as well as Honourable Malak. Thank you, Chair.
The Chair of the ICASA, I recognize you to proceed.
Thank you. Greetings, Honourable Chair Maneli, and Honourable members and colleagues within the sector. Today is indeed a great day. Today is indeed a great day in the lives of South Africans. It's a great day. It's a great accolade to the portfolio committee that oversees our work, the department, the ministry, and everyone involved. We can officially confirm that indeed the spectrum auction is currently underway as we speak. This is the first auction ever happen on South African soil. It was occasioned by the fact that there is more demand to this spectrum than there is the actual, you know, available spectrum. As a result, we could not venture or assign it administratively as it has been done in the past. We have six applicants: Vodacom, MTN, Cell C, Rain, Liquid Telecoms, as well as Telkom. Now, of these six applicants, they have all paid application fees. They are all abiding with the auction rules. And as I've indicated, it is currently happening. Tied on to this auction, which is an important point for South Africans to know, are very tangible societal benefits. Over 500 police stations will be connected as part of the obligations. Over 18,000 public schools will be connected. Close to 4,000 government clinics will be connected, and over 1,800 government clinics will be connected. It is on the back of this spectrum licensing that as a regulator, we will be able to lawfully make meaningful interventions on the cost to communicate. So now we are dealing with the issue of, you know,
complaints from society, which really need to be looked at. They are valid around the cost to communicate on broadband data, as well as on voice. When the respect comes scarcity, ICASA is also constrained because operators raise a valid point that our input costs are high, because we need to embark on spectrum refarming, we need to embark on expensive exercises to make sure that we render services to South Africans. Now that the auction would have happened, we will be able to hold them meaningfully to the commitments and aspirations on cost and also on improved user experience. This auction is happening as we speak. And I think we all need to really appreciate this moment. It's been close to 15 years that ICASA, you know, has been attempting this in different forms and shapes. Yes, there is an active litigation. It was brought about by Telkom around the 5th of January this year. It was part A, which was the interdict, and part B, the substantive arguments. Part A, Telkom elected to withdraw Part A, which means there was no court proceedings on the interdict, and they elected to go straight into Part B. Telkom, as I have said, they are participating in the auction. So as a result of that, we believe that in their hearts of hearts, they will realize that this requires serious spirit of patriotism. It's about the country, it's not about any of us. And as a result, we will continue through moral suasion, you know, appealing to them to really consider allowing this process to reach its logical conclusion. As we speak, there is no interdict, so we are proceeding with the auction, and we will continue to the very last day to defend public interest. Honorable members, litigation on its own is not justification for us to fold our arms. By so doing, we will be betraying the aspirations of South Africans. ICASA is the last line of defense. And if ICASA abandons its regulatory mandate, simply because organizations, you know, industry players with multi-billion rent annual turnovers have filed affidavits in court, the moment we start to cower will be a very sad moment in the life of South Africans. So it's a good day, nonetheless, notwithstanding you know, the bit of challenges that I have remarked or spoken to. This is a good day. It is a good day for South Africans, and all is unfolding very well. The auction is currently, as I've said, taking place downstairs. So we are grateful. We thank the portfolio committee. We thank the ministry, the minister, the PM, and, you know, everyone else for having given us this much needed support. You know, the portfolio committee, Honorable Maneli, especially for your continuous indulgence when we say we can't present because it's a sensitive matter. Even now, there's only so much I can say. But I think there is nothing else to say other than it is a good day for South Africans. Then when it relates to our performance, of course, we know what we need to tighten, and we are on course to fulfill and meet our objectives. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair Maneli.
Thank you, Dr. Modume, Chair of ICASA.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. I think most of the issues have been covered. Maybe just to buttress the point that the Chair of ICASA was making. I think from us, it's a very exciting moment. I think not only for the department and the ministry, but also for the country, for the economy. Because as you know, this has been one of the binding constraints that the industry has been raising, that the economy requires that we need to release the spectrum so that we can realize the full potential of the telecoms. So it is happening. We want to add to the words that the Chair of ICASA has been making. We are aware of the litigation, particularly the Part B, which is still ongoing, is going to be held around arguments, going to be around April. But we think that something might happen. Maybe we might engage with the litigant so that we're able to resolve the issues that are outstanding, or to come to some kind of an agreement so that we allow the country to move on. Whatever issues that are there, we find ways of dealing with them going forward. So indeed, today the ICASA started the process which they call the opt-in. We know that the big day is going to be the 10th of March, when the main auction is taking place. Chair, on SAPO, maybe before I go to SAPO, let me just say, when we came in August last year, there was a moratorium that had been imposed on a number of entities for recruitment of personnel. We engaged with a number of them. The reason why that moratorium was there, I think, was with regard to the process of review of all the state-owned entities that was commissioned by the presidency. And that process has since been concluded. And so there are a number of entities, I think, from our side, as you know, it's BBI and Centec, that a decision has been taken that they must merge. The other entities are not really affected, but the minister has requested that each of our entities develop they must do a review of themselves and their operation, reimagine themselves into the future and present a plan on the strategy that can talk to that. So the financial, the Films and Publication Board has been in the process of doing that. There has been several postponements, which we have met with them to express our displeasure about the fact that they are not finalizing it. The Council of the FPB is fully committed towards coming up with a strategy which will talk to the content regulator of the future. They are working on that. They have assured me last week that this strategy will be available before the end of this month. And so as soon as it becomes available, we will then look at it in the department. And once the minister and the department gives approval, we will then allow them to then finalize also the organizational structure. As you know, that the structure must follow the strategy. So the structure must then be aligned to the new strategy, and then we will allow them to begin a process of recruitment. But in the meantime, we have seconded an official from our department, Dr. Boloka, as the acting CEO, and he has hit the ground running. The council itself is quite satisfied with Dr. Boloka's service and what he's doing there. I must also say that there's also a very exciting movement in this entity as well, because the president has proclaimed that by the 1st of March, which was last week, the Films and Publication Act of 2019 that you passed in 2019 must come into operation. So it has been operationalized. It fundamentally changes the role and the mandate of the entity. So there is work that has been done there to make sure that this entity then gears itself up for the implementation of the new mandate. Very exciting. The new act has given it some more powers to become the real content regulator of the future. Chair, on SAPO, I know that you have requested us to come and brief you on the strategy. And the discussion here today was such that we're already deep in the discussion of what you're expecting us to do. I think it's on the 15th or so. We will still come and brief you about the building of the South African, building of the post office of tomorrow, the strategy document that we are very happy that we finally, working with the board, have finalized that strategy. But of course, as the colleagues from SAPO were saying, that this strategy document will require funding. They are very exciting initiatives which are in the strategy. And of course, the strategy must also be, when you consider it, also look at this amendment, SAPO amendment bill that we're bringing in, so that it can deal with such things as the universal service obligation that the CEO was talking to, not to water them down, but to ensure that if the entity will continue to execute those obligations, then there must be concomitant funding for them, because currently there is not. And I can tell you that if you look at the entirety of government, there are many entities which carry the same obligations, and they receive funding for the obligations from the fiscals. So it's not something that is unheard of. It's something that is perfectly well within even the principles and the dictates of how we fund the institutions that are pursuing a social mandate. Now, we have had engagements, Chair, with the Treasury. The minister has been engaging with the Minister of Finance.